This week on The Vinyl Guide, we're talking with Rob Halford of the mighty Judas Priest about his new book, Confess, some Judas Priest history, get some answers to long-sought recording and record questions, all direct from the metal god himself, on this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide.
Listen to and collect vinyl records? Well, you're in luck. Welcome to The Vinyl Guide, the podcast made for record nerds like yourself. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
Well, hey everyone, it's Nate here. Wow, what a show opener that track is. That's a song for the band Reality Suite, who sent it in. You may recall a few shows ago, I mentioned I was open to a refresh of the Vinyl Guide theme. I got several people sending in ideas. This is certainly one of the standout ones. I want to thank the band Reality Suite. Let me quickly plug them. Hang on. I think it's realitysuite.com on Twitter, at Reality Suite, and of course they're on Apple Music as well. Thank you so much for the theme idea. I'm definitely going to keep this one handy. And while we're at it, big plug for friend of the show, Danko Jones's new project, Throat Funeral, just released this week. While not on vinyl, it has been in my Bandcamp app, just keeping me company while I pack boxes for our house move. And yes, I am moving house, and I'm building up my arm strength, ready to lift several dozen boxes full of records to our new spot. So I'm not going to bore you with the details, but I'm not looking forward to moving all these records. It'll be better afterward, though, but after we do this move, I think I'll have the arms of Jason Momoa and probably the back of Christopher Reeve. Now, this week, as you've heard, we are talking with Rob Halford of the mighty Judas Priest, who is celebrating his new book, Confess. It's available now. It is a phenomenal look at the life of metal god Rob Halford, heaps of behind-the-scenes stories of his life and the band, and of course, Rob shares the story of living in the closet while fronting one of the top metal bands in the world. And he not only shares it all, but freely discusses what it was like, as well as making all those great albums most of us have in our collections. Now, personally, I have two favorite Judas Priest albums, Defenders of the Faith from 1984 and Firepower from 2018. Judas Priest is a band that keeps delivering the goods across the decades, and Rob is open, talkative, and ready to share on today's show. Today's episode is brought to you by our friends at AudiophileUSA.com, who, by the way, has some great Judas Priest vinyl collectibles up on the site as of this moment. Go to AudiophileUSA.com, search for your favorite band, and you will find the best vinyl copies you are ever likely to see. AudiophileUSA.com only sells excellent and near-mint vinyl records, and you can search by label, by genre, and they ship worldwide. So go to AudiophileUSA.com now and grab that grail before it's gone. And we're also brought to you by GrooveWasher.com. Clean and preserve your vinyl collection with the best record cleaner in the world. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record shop or go to GrooveWasher.com. Grab the Mondo bundle and get 10% off with promo code VinylGuide10. That's the Groove Washer record cleaner, except no substitutes. All right, we are ready to rock. Let's hear Rob Halford of Judas Priest confess right here on The Vinyl Guide.
Is this the metal god?
Hello, Nate. How are you?
Rob, great to hear your voice, mate. How you doing?
I'm doing really good, thank you. Out here in the boiling desert in Arizona. waiting for some more monsoon rain that seems to be avoiding us like the plague.
My goodness. Well, I'm in a desert on the other side of the planet here in Sydney. And I got to I got to tell you, I've been reading this book Confess. I was lucky enough to get an advance peek of it, and it's really helped me revisit so many great memories of my youth. Seeing Priest as a kid and, of course, reading all the behind-the-scenes confessions, which were happening that obviously the fans didn't get to see. How difficult was it to summarize such a varied and colorful and even controversial life in several hundred pages?
Well, it was a combination of emotions, really, mate. I mean, this is the first time I've ever made a book like this, and probably will never be another one unless we can find some other confessions to make. And with that in mind, you know, under the great guidance of Ian Gittins, who took me from the earliest memories up until practically present day, it was a roller coaster ride. There's no doubt about that. Some of it was quite difficult, as you probably read in some of the moments in the book. They're quite quite dark episodes of my life. But I think that in general terms, this kind of experience that you offer has to be as open and as honest as you can possibly make it. And that's really why we came up with the title Confess.
In the book, you detail your life from the very beginnings, and you were sharing that you knew at age 10 that you were gay. There was never any question about your sexual preference really throughout your life. Is that correct?
As best as my memory can recollect it, yeah, that's the first time I had what we call a crush on someone. And it's remarkable, really. I dare say I'm not the only person that can remember their first feelings in that part of their life. I think that's just part of the transition that we go through as we start to grow and think about various parts of ourselves that suddenly appear out of the blue. But yeah, in talking with Ian, that to me kind of was so profound that It became an indelible kind of memory, much as a lot of these early moments, anecdotes, what have you. They made an impression on me, so I think in the makeup of me as a person, that first episode that had those types of emotions involved were happening at that early age.
You've got a remarkable way of expressing the clarity of your youth, even to the point of recalling the Skyboat song. You could still sing that today, couldn't you?
Now, it doesn't happen too often, but occasionally these international phone calls get cut off and we had to reconnect. So let's pick up again where Rob Halford was talking about the Skyboat song, which is discussed in his book Confess as the very first song he ever sung publicly as a young man.
Hello, mate.
Oh, I guess a monsoon hit, yeah?
we had a technical glitch. We had one of those Metal Magic glitches. But let me just pick up, mate, on that beautiful song that really resonated in my life, singing that little Scottish ballad, Speed Bonnie Boat, all those years ago. And that experience of having an audience, a classmate, and then the surprising round of applause. As a little kid, you know, a lot of things that happen to us as kids really important, and I've always said that to some extent kicked off my career, you know, as a singer all those years ago.
I guess when you stood up and sang, you noticed that you got the attention, you weren't shy, there wasn't stage fright, it was something that you could do and do confidently, yeah?
Yeah, it was a very natural failing. Although I must add that I didn't really have much of a choice, because in those days, when the teacher told you to do something, you did it, you know. You didn't talk back.
Yeah.
You did what you were told, and so yeah, it was very very spontaneous. And I think, you know, the great thing about spontaneity is that you get a real essence of honesty coming out in the performance. So there I was, just a little kid singing the song and having a lot of fun with it, and of course, in the long term, having the tremendous impact and value.
As part of Judas Priest, I imagine at some point you had to share the information about your sexual preference with the rest of the band, the managers, the agents. They would have to know as well. At what point did you share that information, and what was that conversation like?
I think that part of my makeup was very apparent. I didn't really make any changes. I don't recall ever openly making a statement, but I think it was pretty apparent to those people close to me, and it was regarded as a non-issue, which, let's face it, it should be. Your sexuality should be of no issue whatsoever. Unfortunately, that's not the way the world works. But at that particular moment, all we as a band were focused on was getting the best pieces into the right places to make Judas Priest sound as good as we became.
Mm-hmm. Were there some lengths that the band management went about to preserve your secret?
I think that they did that with the best intentions in their own way of thinking. And if we do look at that particular time in heavy metal, in rock and roll, in music, of that genre, and just because, again, the way the world was working at that moment, there could have been significant kickback that may or may not have worked against us. I don't know. All that's hypothetical, isn't it? But I think that there was a sense and a belief at that time that me keeping a low profile, however you define that, was the best way to go.
One thing that's become apparent to me, just reflecting all these years later, is Judas Priest were really marketing masters, maybe second only to maybe Kiss. I mean, there was the image management, there was the merchandise, the huge stage shows, the pyrotechnics. How intertwined was the business of Judas Priest to the band members? For example, how much did the band comment or have input in terms of some of the imagery or merchandise or even album covers?
You know, I think that's, again, a natural progression of events. If you are lucky enough to become successful as a band, then you look at all of the opportunities and dimensions that fit into your growth as a group. And for us as Priest, of course, remember that we were at the forefront of this new experience in rock and roll called heavy metal. And so we were just as much on an adventure of originality as anyone else who was at the forefront of a new musical style. So we thought a lot about that, you know, bringing the bike out on stage, which was a very, spontaneous moment. The leather and the whips and the studs and the chains came from some of my early adventures into certain shops in Soho in London, but they fitted to this metal, larger than life, louder than life presentation, other than the music that was coming out of the speakers. You know, the music that was coming out of the speakers was strong and fierce and potent and powerful, and you had to find a way of reimagining that into a visual experience. So that's what we did, you know. And I look back at that now with a lot of pride and affection that we literally created not only the sound of music or heavy metal, but we also made the image and everything that goes with it become real as well.
Yeah, to this day, if you talk about a heavy metal band, they generally have the sound and the look of Judas Priest. So when it came to the album covers, did the band get involved too much? Like, did you know about the Screaming for Vengeance illustrations or the Defenders illustrations, or were you shared a few options at some point and selected one?
We always have a strong awareness of what we were about as a group in every aspect of what that sentence means that I just said, and that included the artwork. A lot of the artwork came from our own ideas. Sadly, the Destiny album cover has become kind of a very kind of iconic look for the band, and that came out of this Fallen Angel imagery idea. And onwards, you know, we worked with some great people with our wonderful label, who are still with, Columbia, Epic, CBS, Sony, it's all under the same umbrella. And they have, in those days, terrific, adventurous people in the artwork for not only Priest, but for all of the acts. But we kind of asked them to focus more on this this heavier type of illustrative appearance. So you know, Screaming for Vengeance, the idea of a screaming eagle tearing down through the sky, the Hellion as it's called, it all comes from our own ideas and definitions of the band from record to record. And then, of course, the really famous guy, Ross Ladd, who did some of the incredible artwork for, I think, the Sin After Sin and Hell Bent Forever. You know, if you're lucky to work with people that really know who you are and what you're about, then they can be at the same table and be ready to have a discussion because they understand you. So the artwork, then and now, is very important to Priest.
Absolutely. It's created this visual universe that, again, complements the music and the look of the band. In your book, you discuss the first deal with Gull Records. And you go quite in detail with it. Again, I found a lot of enjoyment in that. I believe you said that they currently hold the rights to the first two LPs. Is that still the case? Do you think you'll ever get the rights back to that music?
Well, you never say never in rock and roll. You know, things are always kind of morphing and changing direction. I have to think that if I was probably the guy that was in that position, I may take the same type of motivation and just hold it close to my chest, because those first two records, the first two records of any band, mate, are crucial because they define you. And I think that this chap understood that with Rock and Roll and Some Things of Destiny, particularly Some Things of Destiny, which is often referenced as the launch pad for the band in the way that we kind of simplified a lot of things that we were about. Yeah, it's still as it is, you know. And it's a little bit of, I won't say annoying. I wouldn't give that much of emotion away, but it would be a more pleasant environment if we had everything, you know, under our control. But you can't have everything in life. Mm-hmm. And We're just happy that if you want to hear rock and roll, if you want to hear Sadness of Destiny, there are multiple ways of still doing that.
Now, let me ask you a question. Have you ever seen the movie Heavy Metal Parking Lot?
Oh, yes, a few times. And that's fantastic. I mean, it was a very simple idea, wasn't it, Nate? Just to stand in the parking lot and interview fans, and in this case, it was, you know, the best fans in the world, heavy metal maniacs, as we affectionately call our fans, and to watch them and to see and hear the passion of their love for Judas Priest. And I dare say that's the case for most opportunities. If you go into a parking lot with a phone these days and ask the same kind of questions, you'll get that really beautiful sense of what it's like to be a fan, to be a genuine fan of not only the band, but the music, the style of music that you're married to. And it's just an incredible bit of work. It doesn't last very long, but it everything that happens in there is riveting, you know. I sometimes wonder now where those fans are now. I'm sure they're still with us, and I'm sure they still go to Priest shows. I've always had a kind of a fun idea of trying to get all of the people that were in the parking lot and see where they are now. You know, I bet you a dollar that their passion for Priest and their passion for metal hasn't changed one bit.
Well, interestingly, there is a DVD of that where they have an extra, Where Are They Now? And they track down the people who are in that parking lot and have a conversation with them some 30-something years later.
Nate, I wasn't aware of that. And if you can pass some information over as to how I can get a look at that, I'll find the time to do that. Wow, that's wonderful. I hope that what I've just suggested is a fact that they're still metalheads, still metal maniacs.
Oh yeah, most of them are, but much less spandex these days. Let's put it that way.
me included.
So, in 1984, Judas Priest was put into the crosshairs of the PMRC, and you go into that in the book. But the one thing I wasn't quite sure of is, how did the band feel? Did the band feel that it was something that was a true threat? What was the reaction of the band?
We were shocked and stunned and thought it was a bit of a joke at first, quite honestly. We didn't think that it had any value or substance, because it was absurd. The allegations were absurd. And we never dreamed in a million years that we would end up having to get on a plane and fly all the way to Reno, Nevada, to literally fight for our lives in the music, not only ourselves, but what that whole court case had implications of the so-called subliminal messages. It was a really far-reaching episode that we had to go through. But we did, you know. I mean, firstly, you cannot ignore a subpoena. I mean, we were handed subpoenas as we got off the tour bus one day somewhere in Texas. Once you're subpoenaed, you have to appear. If you don't, you get thrown in jail. Mm-hmm. But I think we were eager to go out there and put our side of the story across, which was that it was nonsense and it was ridiculous, and that the whole story should have been focused on the terrible, tragic loss of these two beautiful guys that were massive Priest fans.
One of the areas that you talk about in your book as well is playing those final Led Zeppelin shows in Oakland. Those shows were towards the beginning of Priest's career, opening up what was effectively Led Zeppelin's last shows out of the U.S. Those shows were actually quite legendary due to fights between Led Zeppelin security and Bill Graham security. Did you witness any of the tension of those groups during the shows?
You know, Nate, we didn't know anything about that until after the event. We, just some days later. Of course, news travels much slower in those days. Now, of course, every incident is coming to you sometimes live on Facebook or whatever. It's streamed, you know. I'm sure that may have been the case back in the day. It could have been in that type of technological place. But, yeah, it was overall, you have to look at that moment that happened for Priest as being, again, a wonderful opportunity given to us by Robert, who wanted the band to open up for Zeppelin. What a great opportunity for us to play to so many people, 2 days back to back, albeit what is kind of like the crack of dawn, rock and rollers. Anything that happens before midday is the crack of dawn. But we went out there and knew we had something very important to do. And we did it. And as a result of that, it enabled Priest to break on pretty much the west coast of America, because it was people came from all over to see those particular shows all over the world. But the vast majority of the people that were there were from California and various places up there on the west coast. So, yeah, legendary. I think a lot of bands have the moment. It's not necessarily a tipping point, but as far as the groundwork that Priest was creating on his first American tours, this was the penultimate moment. Of course, we finished a massive tour of America at that juncture, and we were ready to go home, but we got the call from Robert, and so we parked ourselves in a sleeping hotel by very loud freeway for 2 weeks, waiting to go and do these two gigs. And, the rest, as they say, is magic.
Now, Rob, I want to be respectful of your time. I know we have just a few minutes now. Again, your book is phenomenal. I know you just did an audio version of that book. What sort of extras or things can readers or listeners to your book expect in the audio version?
That's a great question, mate. And I'll answer it as simply as I can. It's one thing to read a book with your mouth closed and your eyes and your brain doing the work. It's another completely different emotional, psychological experience to read the words. To read the words of your life, because all of your emotion gets poured into the things that you're yourself reading off the book, as I was standing in the studio for over a week, reading every single moment of your life. And I found that to be as fulfilling, probably even more so than the book itself. I'd like to feel that there's a chance here for everyone that is considering taking a look at Confess to also listen to Confess, because it's a bit like when you go into church and you confess. If you're of a certain faith, you speak it out, The commitment of what you're saying emotionally strikes harder than reading it off the page. Because if you read it as a reader, you're reading it for yourself. You're reading it in your own voice. But when you're listening to it from the voice of the person whose life is being put out in front of you, then the audio aspect of Confess is very important, I feel, and that's value.
All right. Well, Rob, thank you so much for joining us here on The Vinyl Guide. I want to remind the listeners to check out Rob's book, Confess, out September 29th in all the spots that you would typically find books. Of course, it's online. You could get the Kindle version. There's going to be the audio version, which you just heard Rob talking about. And of course, if you want a paper version, you could find it at just about any bookstore. Try to buy it from an independent record or bookstore. Support those businesses. And again, Rob, thank you so much for coming on The Vinyl Guide.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Nate. Thank you so much for the chat. We talked about a lot of important parts of Confess, and I would love to talk about every, how many pages is it? 300 pages. We love this. Thank you so much, Nate. It's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you for your great feelings about Confess. And for everyone that's listening, we're really grateful for the chance for you to also dive into the heavy metal world of the Metal Garden to hear me make my confessions in real life.
Well, Rob, for myself as a grown podcast host, back to the 16-year-old boy who saw Judas Priest probably half a dozen times, I got to tell you, it's an absolute thrill to speak with you and, of course, read your words. So thanks again, Rob, and keep rocking, mate.
All the best, mate. Thank you, everybody. Keep becoming the heavy metal faith. And remember, it's always good to confess. Thank you.
Well, there we go. Mr. Rob Halford, the metal god of the mighty Judas Priest, right here on the Vinyl Guide. Again, his book, Confess, is marvelous. Go pick up a copy. It's available now. You can grab a Kindle version and be reading within minutes. Pretty fascinating book. Lots in there, so check it out. That's it for this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes. Put them on your social media. Tweet about them. Share them with your friends on Instagram. Do whatever you can, but please help us get the word of The Vinyl Guide podcast out there. And of course, we always love to have a good review. Hop up on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever and give us a 5 out of 5 or 10 out of 10 and say something nice. That is always appreciated. We'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, keep spinning. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate at thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram at Vinyl Guide. Until next time, keep spinning.